Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 6 of week number 9, studying Matthew chapter 9. As we get started, these reminders. Though our programs air thousands of times each month, they do not air continuously everywhere. But if you want it, you can have full-time, unlimited access to all of our materials, including all of the broadcasts that we air, by going to internationalgospelhour.com and by clicking on the free menu there. Here are two great ways to study God's Word. First, we encourage you to try our free, self-paced online Bible study program. Just go to IGH.worldbibleschool.org in order to get started. Or you can click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. Second, if you prefer, you can take our free 30-lesson Bible study series by mail. To start today, just call our toll-free number 1-855-IGH-6988. Let's get into a study of God's Word, Matthew chapter 9, today. At the end of our last study, we noted Jesus' threefold response to the question about fasting by John's disciples. Jesus used these three illustrations: the wedding and the bridegroom, the old garment and the new piece, and then the new wine and the old wineskins. We have already discussed the first one. Concerning the last two illustrations, the new or unshrunk cloth and the old garment, and the new wine and the old wineskins, Jesus had this to say: "You don't put new, unshrunk cloth on an old garment, because it will shrink when washed, thus pulling away from the old garment. That creates an even larger tear than it was supposed to repair, which of course defeats the very purpose of mending the tear. Nor do you put new wine into old wineskins. The new wine will, when it expands, break the old skins. You put new wine, rather, into new skins. Wine, if untreated by heating or filtering or diluting or keeping it cold and so forth, it will naturally ferment, and as part of the fermentation process, it will expand. Old skins have already been used and have, accordingly, been stretched to some degree. And if they have already been stretched, the membranes of the wineskin have been thinned and weakened. So, putting new wine in old wineskins was not wise. It would be better to put new wine into new, unstretched, and so unthinned wineskins. They would be less likely to break because the wineskin's membrane was thicker, stronger, more likely to contain the wine put in it." These last two examples, the constricting garment and the expanding wineskins, teach the same lesson. Some things are not appropriate regardless of the circumstances. Remember, John's disciples asked why Jesus' disciples did not fast. Fasting, though important, was not appropriate under certain circumstances. Jesus' earthly ministry was just such a circumstance. On one occasion, Jesus said that he must work because night was coming when no one could work. See the opening verses of John chapter 9. There was a constant need to concentrate on his earthly ministry while he had the time to do so. The absence of fasting on the part of the disciples was not an indication of their lack of spirituality, but rather a matter of priority for the time being. Everything about Jesus' ministry was an immediate, present tense, at that moment priority. There's another lesson to be considered. Jesus' teaching fulfilled the Old Testament law, and in so doing, his teaching extended the law's purpose into the New Covenant age. Jesus introduced that principle in Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and following, and it remained a constant throughout his teaching, preaching, and healing ministry. The new covenant that Jesus came to inaugurate was not like the old one. So said Jeremiah, starting in chapter 31, verses 31 and following. Assuming that the new covenant would just correct the old was like assuming that a new piece of cloth could sufficiently repair an old garment, or that new wine would fit well into old skins. The old garment would be worse through the new patch. But in the second parable, both the wine and the wineskin would be ruined. Jesus' teaching, here and elsewhere, addressed how the gospel fulfilled the law, not by amending the Jewish system, but by instituting an ethical and good news kingdom rooted in Jesus' sonship. Starting at chapter 9, verse 18 of Matthew, through chapter 9, verse 34, Matthew's gospel focuses on four miracles, or healings. Though four miracles are detailed, five individuals were healed. That's because the third in the series involved the healing of two blind men. Those four miracles, or healings, were the healing of the ruler's daughter, chapter 9, verses 18 through 26, the healing of the woman with a 12-year-long flow of blood, chapter 9, verses 20 through 22, the healing of the two blind men, chapter 9, verses 27 through 31, and near the end of the chapter, Jesus healed a mute and a demon-possessed man, chapter 9, verse 31 through 34. As you read through the chapter, you will see that the account of the healing of the ruler's daughter was interrupted, as Jesus was answering the fasting questions posed by John's disciples, a ruler came to him asking Jesus to heal his daughter. Jesus, along with his disciples, began to follow the man, intending to go to the ruler's house and attend to his daughter. But as Jesus was heading that way, a woman with a flow of blood touched Jesus, causing Jesus to pause and address her needs before continuing on to the ruler's house. That's why, if you were listening closely, you noted that the account of the ruler's daughter went from chapter 9, verse 18 through verse 26, but that the record of the woman's healing appeared in the middle of that narrative, in chapter 9, verses 20 and 21. Let's look at all four accounts of healing in this, the second half of Matthew chapter 9. As Jesus was explaining why he and his disciples did not fast, a ruler came and worshipped him. The leper who came to be healed in Matthew chapter 8 worshipped Jesus. There was no command to do so at that point. And, one chapter later, there was still no command to do so. It appears to be a natural response to how Jesus was perceived by the multitudes. Nothing in either account indicates that it was rejected, nor was there anything that demands that either the leper or the ruler worship Jesus, believing that Jesus was divine. The overall intent of Matthew's gospel was geared to show just that. But that does not mean that everyone who reverenced or bowed before Jesus believed it. Luke's account tells us not that the ruler worshiped Jesus, but that he fell down at Jesus' feet, Luke chapter 8, verse 41. Though the terms in Luke's and Mark's parallel accounts are the same, both of them differ from the one in Matthew. The ruler told Jesus that his daughter had just died, and he asked Jesus to come and lay your hand on her, and she will live. Here we have another demonstration of great faith, but there's something different about this one. When the Roman centurion came to Jesus, he believed that Jesus could heal his servant from a distance. His faith was said to be great. It was great, of course, because he exhibited an Abraham-like faith by believing that Jesus could do something that he had not seen before. But Jesus said that his faith was great because he had not found anything like it, not even in Israel. The centurion, remember, was not a Jew. This ruler believed that Jesus could bring his daughter back to life. There's no indication of any prior resurrection in Matthew's gospel. But in Matthew 10's account of the limited commission, Jesus empowered the apostles to heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons, Matthew 10, verse 8. Jesus was then, in effect, training and preparing by actual demonstrations in his own ministry what the apostles were to do in theirs. There are only four explicit uses of the term rendered as resurrection in Matthew's gospel, all of them appearing in Matthew chapter 22's account of the Sadducees' confrontation with Jesus about that topic. You see that in Matthew chapter 22, verses 23, 28, 30, and 31. There are, however, several references to resurrection in Matthew through the use of the terms raised, raise up, arose, or some equivalent. In what appears to be parallel accounts in Mark chapter 5 and Luke chapter 8, This man, identified as Jairus, was a ruler of the synagogue. The designation ruler indicates that he was one who had administrative authority, a leader, and official. Naturally, as a ruler of the synagogue, this ruler would have been a Jew. We will not examine this in the same detail as the centurion's faith, but we simply ask this question: where did this Jewish ruler of the synagogue get the idea that Jesus could bring his daughter back to life, and that he could do so simply by touching her? We do not know how much of Jesus' ministry of teaching, preaching, and healing that he had personally witnessed, but if he knew anything about that ministry, as we find it recorded starting in Matthew chapter 4, verse 23, he would have seen or heard about many different kinds of miracles: healing of all kinds of diseases, healing by touch, healing from a distance, healing with only a word, casting out demons, forgiving sins, and much more. When taken all together, this man, like the centurion, could very well have drawn the conclusion that Jesus' multiple demonstrations of his deity today were not the limit of what Jesus could do, nor did they totally define who Jesus was. The bottom line: this ruler of the synagogue believed that Jesus could do even more. Moreover, the ruler believed that his daughter, having been touched by Jesus, could live again. After he heard the ruler's plea, Jesus arose, and with his disciples, he followed the ruler. But before Jesus got to the man's home, Jesus was stopped suddenly by a woman who touched his clothing. This woman had a flow of blood that had lasted 12 years. According to Mark's and Luke's account, she spent all her livelihood on doctors who could not heal her. Rather than getting better, she only got worse. She came up behind Jesus in the crowd, and she touched his garment. Why? Because she thought to herself, "If I can touch his garment, I will be well." And as soon as she touched Jesus' clothing, she was indeed healed. Once again, we witness a soul plagued by illness who drew the conclusion that Jesus could heal them. The leper, the centurion, the ruler, there would be many more. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 9. This reminder, as we draw to a close, let me encourage you to consider enrolling in our completely free, self-paced online Bible study. To get started, just go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.